Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, an in-depth look at propaganda and censorship of all alternative media and the Internet, and the history of the government's use of the media as a weapon against democracy and citizens. My guest is Professor Mark Crispin Miller. He is Professor of Media, Culture, and Communications at New York University, where he specializes in modern propaganda, history of advertising, and film and major media. He's the lead chief editor of the series Forbidden Bookshelf, which republishes important books that have been censored and banned and ignored or wrongly criticized in the course of American history, such as the works of I.F. Stone or Lewis Mumford or Peter Dale Scott or Christopher Simpson and others. Mark received his master's and doctorate at Johns Hopkins University. He's written and contributed to many books, including Loser Take All, as well as Fooled Again, which cover the election fraud. He runs the news and commentary blog News from the Underground that can be found at his website, markcrispinmiller.com. Nice to have you with us today, Mark.
Great to be back, Gary. Thanks a lot for having me.
Mark, before we go to you, I want to go to an email that I received today. I'm just going to read it. This is from The Natural Blaze, a site that I respect. They do good work. Mm-hmm. Independent media has taken a big hit recently, and Natural Blaze is no exception. Virtually the entire independent media sphere is being censored and frozen out in a way never before seen in this country. More specifically, social media sites like Facebook have been censoring our posts and preventing our followers from being able to see them. Google has played just as big a role in censoring our information by delisting our website and essentially hiding our articles from anyone who isn't already aware of the site. Facebook and Google have launched a massive campaign to eliminate alternative and independent media in order to protect the interests of the 1% and hide any dissent behind its great wall of censorship. Unfortunately, these are the places where most people get their news, and for that reason, the censorship of these two platforms alone have had a drastic effect on our readership and the readership of other independent outlets. This censorship began in earnest during the course of the 2016 election, when the term fake news was applied to alternative and independent outlets, despite the fact that these same outlets had been and generally are more honest than anything in the corporate mainstream media. Next was the ridiculous Russian hysteria that has seen any form of dissent being attributed to the Russians. Now, in only 2 short years, Natural Blaze itself has been labeled fake news in Russia propaganda. At the same time, this first happened when it did, we weren't sure how reporting on the benefits of vitamin C was fake or Russian. Now, however, mainstream media and even the U.S. Congress is labeling people who oppose gas hydrofracking, forced vaccination, and GMOs as either victims or perpetrators of Russian propaganda. Mass witch hunts and censorship never lead to good things, and that is why it is important more so than ever to support independent media like Natural Blaze. Facebook is controlling what you see in your news feed, and it's not letting Natural Blaze through. Facebook is actively removing independent media and disseminating dissenting voices, and we suspect Natural Blaze is on the short list. We have already had accounts associated with our page deleted and blocked from sharing our information. In fact, we believe our days on Facebook are numbered. Google's also hitting us hard. For instance, our website is blocked on Google News. In addition, Google's change of algorithms have made it much more difficult for people to see our articles on the Internet. Natural news articles can't even be found on a Google search due to Google's changes. As a result, we have seen our traffic and our ad revenue, which we depend upon to survive, drastically reduced. Before we go elsewhere, in our discussion, I just want you to be aware that Richard Gale, who you know, who's our executive producer, Richard took a look at how many other sites are being, in effect, blocked, censored, or attacked. And the number is staggering, over 200. Just among those would be Global Research, Op-Ed News, Consortium News, and the some of the most important ones reaching the most people, like GreenMedInfo. Now, thus far, we have not at the Progressive Radio Network, and we are the number one progressive radio station in the world, and this is the number one progressive radio program, according to Google's own analytics. We have not been censored. So just to let you know that tonight, I have sent out, through Richard, a letter welcoming each one of the sources, the ones I just mentioned, a lot more, to have their own program on Progressive Radio Network. I'm setting aside programming on the weekend so that their voice will be heard. Your thoughts on what's happening to these media, please.
Well, first of all, let me thank you for taking that step. That's a generous and, you know, I would say patriotic move on your part. What the email you read is right on the money. I would only say that it understates the problem because we're seeing the same thing happen on YouTube and Twitter. So all four of the major social media platforms were involved in this crackdown on free speech. I just learned today, for example, that YouTube has demonetizing sites that have the word conspiracy in the title. People are finding ways around this, finding the synonyms or euphemisms for conspiracy, like crazy stories and so on. But it shouldn't really be necessary to have to do that. The fact is that these four platforms, all of which are privately owned, it's important to note, are working very closely with the state to erase almost all traces of sites, of efforts, of opinions, of news that in one way or another run counter to the official story, you know. And we have indeed seen this intensify since the 2016 election. There's a guy who was a reporter at Huffington Post, Dan Seaman. I think I have his first name right. He was, you know, a Huffington Post reporter, and he was writing pieces about the controversy over Hillary Clinton's health. And because of this, Huffington Post effectively, you know, severed its ties with him. He could no longer write for them, and there was no explanation given, you know. That was a taboo subject. Since then, Seth Rich has become a taboo subject, even to talk about him, to raise questions about his untimely death and his possible responsibility for downloading the DNC emails and giving them to WikiLeaks. Even attempting to talk about this earns you all kinds of, you know, venomous attacks. You're accused of propagating Russian material and so on. So, I mean, we could spend the whole hour listing examples of forbidden subjects. The fact is that this process has become really intense and very concerning since the last election. Because what we're basically seeing here, Gary, is the American state, that is to say the government, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, and affiliated corporate interests, are basically trying to effect an all-American version of what is going on in China, where the government has the legal power and ability to shut down sites that it doesn't like and does this all the time. This is standard practice in China, where there is a very large sort of cyber police force on the job 24/7 looking out for any kind of material that offends the party, and then they'll just get rid of it. They can't do that in this country. It would be unseemly. You know, it would be too explicitly authoritarian. libertarian and would seem to violate the spirit of the First Amendment. So they resort to these other devices, you know, highly technical methods for effectively doing the same thing that China does, you know. So I guess we can draw the conclusion that whatever country you're talking about, power simply doesn't like to be contradicted, doesn't like to be questioned, and propaganda does not like argument, does not want contradiction, it does not tolerate ambiguity, it only wants assent, it wants its environment to be totally receptive to itself, and what we're seeing now is evidence that's precisely what's going on. So it's a very, very troubling time for those of us who actually do believe in free expression and a free speech.
I appreciate that overview. Thank you. And Mark, just to add to the names I mentioned of sites that are banned or censored, Truthdig with Robert Scheer, Middle East Eye, Consortium News, Robert Perry and Toei Pass was also censored, Anti-Media, Op-Ed News, Zero Hedge, We Are Change, Activist Post, Truth in Media, Strategic Cultural Foundation, New Oriental Review, RT, Sputnik, Counterpunch, Countercurrents, and the Corbett Report. Now, mainstream media today has become increasingly compromised, in my opinion. And we have to include the Internet as well, because it has become such an important factor of shaping people's opinions about government and society and the world and current events. So before we dive further into some of this topic, including censorship of independent voices you just referred to and smaller media outlets, could you give us a short lesson about how the mainstream media, meaning the major television networks or newspapers, such as the New York Times, Washington Post, the popular commercialized blogs and magazines you just mentioned, Huffington Post, spin, twist, or distort the truth of news items to support a specific preconceived agenda? And what, in your estimation, differentiates today's right-wing media from the left? And third, is there a line drawn between how much influence corporations have upon what is reported or not, and what the government or federal agencies permit? And finally, it's not just historically the right wing. Today it's the left wing, and including I've been censored on Pacifica. Yes. Now, that's rather ironic, since I have the longest-running non-commercial daily radio program in American history, 42 years.
Right.
I've raised more money than anyone in history of Pacifica, won more awards, have the largest audience, and always have for 42 straight years. Yet I'm censored on the foundation that I donated my pay 42 years ago, which today would have been, after 42 years on three stations, over $5 million, to the very people who turn around and censor me. So I include Pacifica, at its worst, as a part of the problem. The forum is yours.
Well, those are four big and important and interrelated questions. You know, it's not going to surprise you when I say that the so-called mainstream media, the corporate press, has degenerated to a point that really, really takes my breath away. I mean, I've been studying the media critically for decades, since the 70s. And of course, all my life, I've been, you know, a reader and viewer of the major newspapers, one or another of them, the wire services, the TV networks, and so on. And I can safely say that I have never seen anything like what we've been seeing over the last couple of years. The corporate media is nothing but fluff and propaganda of the most egregious kind. And you know, I don't know if we discussed this last time I was on, but I want to say again that I'm about to make a point that not that long ago would have made me wince, because I would have found it a kind of vulgar overstatement. But now I think it's absolutely true, which is that the press functions today, the American press and much of the Western press function today exactly as Dr. Goebbels' press system functioned in Nazi Germany in the late 30s. And I can give you a specific example. If you look at William Shirer's classic Berlin Diary, which he smuggled out of Germany, where he was stationed as a CBS radio correspondent in the late 30s. The book was a big bestseller, and it remains a highly relevant text, unfortunately, for all of us, because of entries like the one for August 10th, 1939. Shirer had been elsewhere in Europe on business and came back to Germany and was struck by the fact that when you've been away from Germany and came back to see how the press there was functioning, it was always kind of a great, well, it was a great shock to see the contrast between the Nazi press and the press in the rest of Europe, which hadn't yet been taken over by the Nazis. He was referring specifically to the way the German newspapers, every one of them, were all, their headlines were all screaming about Poland's preparations to attack Germany. Okay? Everywhere you looked, the German press was warning that Poland was clearly aggressive, was militarizing pell-mell, was planning to attack poor, innocent Nazi Germany, right? Shirer is really struck by this and said that, you know, everywhere outside of Germany, everybody's well aware that the situation is completely the opposite, that Poland is a sitting duck right next to Germany. Germany has militarized, let me add parenthetically, with tremendous help from Wall Street and other American interests, Hitler has built up his war machine, has designs on Poland. That's what everybody outside Germany understands. Inside Germany, nobody really understands, except for a few people. Shirer ends the entry. I'm talking about this from memory, so it might be a little rough. But he says, you know, it is astonishing. You would think that nobody in this country would believe such outrageous lies, and yet so many do. He ends. Okay. Now I think of this passage often when I read pretty much any coverage of Russia in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, any of the other major daily papers, or from CNN, or from any of the TV networks, or MSNBC, or NPR, or PBS. I mean, you name it. You go down the whole list of outlets, and you find the same stories being repeated about Russia, stories that are fantastic lies that are completely false. The same is the case with the war in Syria, right? People have a completely distorted view of what's happening in this country. In both these cases and many others, you can only get the truth by reading widely, by reading many of the sites that you just listed, Gary, because there are people writing pieces there, people who are not getting all their information from the State Department or the CIA or both, the people who have been to Syria or been to Russia or know something about those places. And I only mention those two stories out of quite a few, because there's a long list of stories that are radically misrepresented. I mention those two because those two could be deemed flashpoints in what is really beginning to feel like an imminent world war. That may sound alarmist to some, but if one reads accurate news out of Russia, for example, one knows that the Russian government is really preparing to defend itself, is issuing very clear, blunt warnings, to the U.S. not to ramp up its military presence in Syria, not to launch an attack on Syria, where the president, as very few Americans are aware, has recently warned his people that he has evidence of an impending attack by the United States. I mean, this, I could provide you with many, many more examples of what we're talking about. What we're seeing now is a kind of mendaciousness, a kind of dishonesty, a kind of stridency, a kind of inflammatory exaggeration all throughout the so-called liberal media, the likes of which used to be peculiar to the press in fascist states. Now, you mentioned Pacifica. Let me add that not only has the so-called liberal media become more limited and repetitious and state-oriented than ever before, so that we don't really see much difference in and among those outlets, they're all reporting the same thing. But we've even noticed some of this stuff is also coming from left outlets, and I'm thinking of Amy Goodman's show, that Amy Goodman has had, speaking of Pacifica, you know, she has championed Pussy Riot, for example. She has championed the White Helmets in Syria, which is, to me, especially shocking, because the White Helmets have been definitively debunked by several very careful analysts as a propaganda operation, as a fake a rescue operation that's actually a propaganda front operated by jihadist criminals, many of whose members aren't even from Syria. The White Helmets are funded by, you know, a billionaire in Britain who has interests in military activity. So to have somebody like Amy Goodman championing the White Helmets, interviewing Gucci protesters from Venezuela, I mean, this is really kind of amazing. We find the same stuff about Russiagate in Mother Jones and on Raw Story and on Huffington Post, you know, that we will get from CNN and the New York Times and the rest of them, so that there's really no clear sense in which what we've been calling the left or progressive media is, when it comes to a number of really important stories, any different from the corporate press. So I don't know if I've answered all four of your questions, but the fact is that we have never more badly needed to have access to a range of alternative outlets than at the present moment, and it is precisely at this moment that those outlets are being delisted, demonetized, buried, dismissed as Russian propaganda, dismissed as founts of fake news, and so on. So, whatever we can do to try to bring the hidden truths about the world to people's perceptions, as you're doing with your show, whatever we can do, we have to do, because, you know, the future of the planet is really at stake here. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
I appreciate that insight. Thank you. The largest war threatening democracies over the control of information, which is why the Facebook scandal with Cambridge Analytics is so important. Mark Zuckerberg, simply is this, in my personal opinion, an amoral entrepreneur who'll do anything to keep shareholders' content and if it drives up revenues. But even with Google, it is more than simply entrepreneurial inventiveness by its founders, Brins and Pages. The company was largely funded and founded due to the founders' past relationship with federal agencies, including the CIA and university departments such as Stanford, that were directly connected with U.S. intelligence and defense agencies and contractors.
Right.
Now, with the effort to censor alternative independent websites and news, including the voices of very conscientious activists, Google, which has reached monopolistic status on the web, will ultimately play a huge role. And maybe you saw the story last week about Google setting up a news initiative and partnering with the New York Times, Washington Post, and Financial Times and others to censor political opposition and promote solely mainstream media. And Google is pledging $300 million over the next 3 years to support what it calls authoritative journalism. Well, that brings to mind what you just mentioned about Goebbels and the Nazi propaganda machine back in the 1930s. What are your thoughts about this and the efforts for federal intelligence to dominate the Internet?
Yeah, well, this, you know, to coin a phrase, this might be a case of America's chickens coming home to roost. Some of us will remember that that's what Malcolm X said after Kennedy's assassination. And that's an appropriate quote in this discussion, precisely because it was the CIA that actually launched the conspiracy theory meme, injected it into the bloodstream of American journalism in early 1967 with the circulation of CIA memo 1035-960. This was a memo that was sent out in response to a spreading skepticism towards the Warren Commission report. As the memo makes quite clear, the CIA was troubled by the fact that there was a new unwillingness to swallow the official story of what had happened in Dallas on November 22, 1963, primarily because of the publication and wide readership of a number of important books about the Kennedy assassination. And the memo mentions Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment and Edward J. Epstein's inquest. And there were a number of others, Sylvia Mayer's Accessories After the Fact, which is a book I recommend very highly. The memo does not mention District Attorney Jim Garrison of New Orleans, but his high-profile prosecution of Clay Shaw for conspiring to kill John Kennedy had also had a tremendous sort of public impact, a big impact on public opinion. So this is a kind of crisis for the official story of the Kennedy assassination, in response to which the CIA sent out this memo, which is readily available online, or at least it was when I last looked. The memo urges station chiefs all over the world, CIA station chiefs, to use their propaganda assets and friends in the media, that's a quote from the memo, to discredit the work of these conspiracy theorists wherever possible. And that, I believe, is the first time that the phrase conspiracy theory, well, I mean, what I'm saying is that the memo resulted in the first use of the phrase conspiracy theorist as a kind of put-down by the New York Times, which came out a few months later. But more generally, the memo had a tremendous effect by starting to make the notion of conspiracy theory as a kind of unhealthy and paranoid thing very, very widespread. I've actually been studying, you know, the slow echo of that phrase and of the memo throughout the press, both the U.S. press and the Western press more generally. And there is no question but that the CIA's propaganda drive was successful and would become staggeringly successful over the decades to come, because the epithets conspiracy theory or conspiracy theorist came to be applied to anyone raising questions about story after story, not just Dallas 63, but the assassinations of King and of Bobby Kennedy, and eventually of Iran-Contra and of 9/11, certainly, and since then of election theft and a whole range of other subjects, you know, from vaccine safety to false flag attacks of various kinds. Subject after subject after subject has long since been relegated to the dustbin of conspiracy theory by journalists who have been, you know, heavily influenced by this propaganda, you know, which may arguably be the most successful propaganda drive in American history, not just because so many of us, I would say all of us, have long since internalized that notion, but also because our use of the phrase represents a tremendous change in the way that the American people think about power. Okay. Now, what I'm about to say is an argument made by a book that I strongly recommend. It's called Conspiracy Theory in America by Lance DeHaven Smith. That's a hyphenated name. A book that Lance wrote at my request for a book series that I was editing for the University of Texas Press, a series called Discovering America. In his book, Conspiracy Theory in America, Lance DeHaven Smith makes a brilliant and convincing argument. But until this memo eventually had this really, really dramatic effect on the way journalists and all the rest of us think about conspiracy, throughout the first two centuries of its history, the United States had been a place where the idea of elite conspiracy was not regarded as eccentric or paranoid or unlikely in the least. On the contrary, the United States of America was arguably founded on the basis of a conspiracy theory. I mean, if we read the Declaration of Independence today, we can only conclude that it is a conspiracy theory from beginning to end. I mean, it's this long catalog of crimes and sins by George III. You know, there's no real evidence for a lot of them. It's just a kind of assertion, one after the other. So that, you know, if something like it were to come out today, it would arguably be laughed off as conspiracy theory. Throughout the Jacksonian era, up through the 19th century, into 1913, when the historian Charles Beard wrote his Economic Interpretation of the Constitution, this was a bestseller, which argued that the framers of the Constitution were driven primarily by their own economic and class interests. Okay, this would be dismissed today as conspiracy theory. A book like that would never get reviewed. Basically, what we've seen is that the American people have come to embrace what Lance DeHaven Smith calls a sentimental view of executive power, that we now tell ourselves that it is unimaginable that our government would do anything like, for example, stage a terrorist attack in order to, you know, achieve a certain purpose. People have sort of forgotten the lessons of the explosion of the Maine in Havana Harbor and the lesson of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, you know, where the government invented an attack by Vietnamese gunboats in order to justify a vast expansion of the U.S. war in Vietnam. So that when people talk about the question of whether 9/11 may have been an inside job, or even just question the official narrative of 9/11, they're immediately accused of the wildest kind of fantasizing, when in fact, you know, decades before this moment, before that memo had worked its black magic on the journalistic mind in the United States, it wouldn't have been regarded as all that crazy to think that the government might be capable of, manipulating public opinion in the most radical ways. You know, the Joint Chiefs presented John Kennedy with an elaborate plan for concocting a pretext to invade Cuba. It was called Operation Northwoods. For those of your listeners who don't know about it, you can look it up online. And they talked about staging terrorist attacks, faking terrorist attacks, actually shooting down airliners, just to provide a casus belli, to give the United States a pretext to invade Cuba. Kennedy was horrified by this, and he completely dismissed it. But I think it's important for us to look back at things like that in order to understand that power has no conscience. Power has no democratic bias. And what we're seeing now is a press system that is, you know, whose content is often arguably, I mean, I think pretty clearly dictated by covert federal actors, that our press system is also heavily controlled by six multinational corporations, that outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post are, to a great extent, owned and controlled by billionaires. I mean, in the case of the New York Times, it's Carlos Slim of Mexico. In the case of the Washington Post, it's Jeff Bezos, you know, who has just snapped up Whole Foods, who got rich with Amazon. The Intercept, to jump over to the left side of the continuum, you know, The Intercept was started up by Pierre Omidyar, the billionaire who started PayPal. You know, I think it's important to understand that people like this, people like Bill Gates and others, they're not motivated by civic spirit. They're not great believers in democracy, and they're not even particularly concerned about the public good. I mean, they got where they got through the most ruthless kinds of monopolistic practices. Money matters to them more than anything. So that the interests of those oligarchs and the interests of a federal, you know, police state, basically, simply don't, they can't afford to leave a whole lot of room for free speech and a free press, you know. So I suppose we shouldn't really be that surprised that Facebook and Google and YouTube and Twitter are you know, slowly clamping down on free expression and doing inexplicitly what the more overtly mighty Chinese Communist Party has been doing openly all this time.
Thank you, Mark, for that insight. I'm going to do something a little different now. We pride ourselves in bursting bubbles, and especially illusionary myths. For example, I've written, along with Richard Gale, 44 articles deconstructing the safety and efficacy issue of vaccines.
Yes.
These are all completely scholar-bound. We have footnotes for everything. There's no hidden sources, no anonymous sources. And they have not responded to a single one. They claim vaccines are safe. Now, if you say they're not, you're put on all these lists. Then you're censored. You're attacked. I want to show you just a short clip, two-minute clip, of the FDA, the CDC, meeting with a group of physicians, hand-picked physicians, to pass on a hepatitis B vaccine with adjuvants in it, including aluminum. All of those ingredients have been shown by toxicologists that we interviewed, professors of toxicology, to be toxic to the brain. And so when people are told with absolute certainty, vaccines are safe, we've done all of our studies, listen to how they actually do it. This will, in effect, highlight what you were just saying.
Is there any comment on using this vaccine at the same time with other adjuvanted vaccines?
We have no data to make a recommendation one way or the other.
So just to sort of put this in context of other vaccines, while preclinical studies were not done using these vaccines simultaneously, our general approach to immunizations is that they can be given at the same time in different limbs.
Dr. Hunter?
Are multiple adjuvanted vaccines used in Europe or other markets?
Dr. Ward, do you want to comment?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. I think unless there's any further discussion, we will take a vote on this recommendation.
Okay. I want to remind everyone to please check your voting whatever machine thing. And voting is open.
Thank you very much. So the voting is completed, and it is unanimous to support this recommendation. Thank you all.
And does anybody around the table, we don't need to go around and verify our votes, but does anybody have any comments they wish to make about their vote? Dr. Simmons?
So just a slight reservation. I think this is a huge advance and a step forward. I am concerned about that signal, that myocardial infarction signal. I am concerned about the use of this new adjuvant and certainly urge us to continue to look at the post-marketing data carefully.
Dr. Hunter?
Just a question about that. How soon would we be getting that post-marketing data update here?
There's two kinds of data. The vaccine safety data link data will require people to be using the vaccine to develop substantive database. And Dr. Sun, do you want to comment on the post-marketing data that FDA is requiring?
I think for the myocardial infarction study, we're seeing that the date for or likely for completion is May 31, 2020.
Okay. Mark, here's what we just learned. That one of the doctors at this panel, and these are almost all pro-big pharma doctors, said he's concerned about infarct, cardio infarct. That's a heart attack.
Right.
We're talking about heart attacks in young babies. Also, they had no knowledge, no studies of what would happen when this vaccine is given with other vaccines, and that's always the way it's given. Third, they had no knowledge that this was used around the world. And then they said, we'll find out what this actually does in our post-marketing report 2 years from now. That means, in real language, they're willing to expose millions of babies to a vaccine that they have no safety data on, in combination with others, but a potential risk factor is heart attacks. And then we wonder about sudden infant death syndrome. This shows you the fraud because people never hear this. I managed to get this clip. This is an inside FDA meeting. All right, they're going to be angry when they hear that I play this with Screw 'em. Now, I can give you 100 reasons why vaccines should be challenged. What a person does is up to their own determination. But if any parent, any doctor, any epidemiologist, anyone says that vaccines are not safe or effective in any way, they're immediately put upon. And Bill Gates is one of the people who supports going after anyone who's a vaccine, what they call vaccine denier. And it doesn't mean that people are denying the role of vaccines. They're simply saying that the way we're giving them, the amount we're giving, what goes in the vaccine should be proven safe. There is no double-blind study. And also, how do you get hepatitis B that a baby is given the vaccine for when if you tested the mother and the mother is negative, there's no way in the world the baby could have it? It's, again, the pharmaceutical industry having power over the media and the medical community for profit, where the interest of the child, the mother, are completely irrelevant. Your thoughts?
Well, this is an issue I've studied carefully. And you know, I have to say, I mean, I'm utterly disgusted and horrified by the clip you played. I'm not at all surprised by it, though. As far as I'm concerned, that moment you played, and here's another provocative comparison, that's on a level with the Wannsee conference when the Nazis planned the Holocaust. That's how strongly I feel about this, that they would be so cavalier about forcibly administering these toxic substances to infants is unforgivable. I mean, this is a crime against humanity. And, you know, we're talking about hepatitis B. I mean, we could talk about the MMR vaccine and the enormous cover-up of the truth about the CDC's own study of the correlation between that triple vaccine and autism in children. You know, I don't have to tell you this, Gary. You know all about it. But, you know, the truth of your observation a moment ago about how people are vilified, demonized, just for speaking certain inconvenient truths about vaccines, well, that was borne out pretty dramatically in the case of Andrew Wakefield, whose, you know, career and reputation were destroyed because he was potentially a very effective advocate for parents simply wishing to be able to give their children the single vaccines for measles, mumps, and rubella instead of the triple vaccine, because far from being an anti-vaxxer, that's all that Wakefield was asking, was that instead of, you know, giving children under three this triple vaccine, parents have the option of being able to divide them up into three different shots, which don't pose the same risk. Well, we all know what happened to Wakefield. The story of the cover-up by the CDC of its own finding that there is a correlation between that vaccine and autism is a story told very effectively in Wakefield's documentary, Vaxxed, which you'll recall, you know, Robert De Niro was pressured into dropping from his Tribeca Film Festival because all the same media whores, you know, launched into the same screams of outrage along with people like Bill Gates, just basically lying about the whole situation. It is really a shocking thing. And let me add, I actually just taught a class at NYU on this whole subject. I teach a course called The Culture Industries, where we talk about the pressures faced by people trying to do good work in journalism and entertainment. And I devoted a class. We have people come in each week and join a panel to discuss a particular story or industry or what have you. And we devoted a class a couple weeks ago to this issue of vaccines. And we had Del Bigtree, the producer of Vaxxed. We had Mary Holland of the NYU Law School, who edited the terrific book Vaccine Epidemic. We had Professor Daryl Hamamoto, who was a tenured professor at UC Davis until he went on a local TV station to criticize California's mandatory vaccination law, and he ended up actually being fired from his job as a tenured professor at UC Davis because of his position on that issue. And finally, Mark Blaxall, the co-author of the book Denial, which I want your audience to know about, This is an absolutely thorough, authoritative demolition of the propaganda claim that there's always been a lot of autism. We just didn't know it because doctors back then didn't have the means of diagnosing it properly. This has been used time and time and time again by vaccine absolutists to deny the absolute historical fact that autism rates only started to climb in this country or anywhere in the world in the 40s and exploded in the late 80s and have been exploding ever since, to the point that I think that the rate of diagnosis may be 1 out of 46, something like that. It used to be 1 out of many hundreds of thousands. Rates of autism have been skyrocketing, and this is, you know, actually, potentially, a national emergency, because we're talking about a condition that is completely debilitating. I'm not talking about little professors. I'm not talking about Rain Man. You know, I'm not talking about people with Asperger's syndrome who are just sort of eccentric and very intelligent in certain ways. I'm talking about full-blown autistic disorder. Kids are basically helpless, where their parents go broke trying to take care of them. This burden is becoming universal, coast to coast. One meets more and more parents of vaccine-injured children. Now, the fact that this issue, this story, having to do with such an important aspect of the public health, would be systematically distorted, the truth suppressed, the investigators, the righteous journalists, you know, demonized, vilified. This is a scandal, you know, that I can't even find the words to adequately convey, but it is clear proof that we have a press system in this country that has radically failed its obligations under the First Amendment.
Mark, I want to add something to this, because we are just about to launch a major campaign that you will hear about it, be given information on.
Good.
We believe that Wikipedia is a major pawn. This is my personal belief, as well as Richard Gale's. This is what our research will be showing. That and when it comes to alternative health, they on their own pages, they've condemned alternative health, and the sources they're using, we have, like Quackbusters, are completely discredited. And yet they claim that they cannot attack anyone using biased material. And we show that virtually all their material is biased. None of it is correct. They can put people up there and attack them, knowing that when someone wants to find out about anyone, myself included, they go to Google, and then Google immediately takes you to their number one search engine, which is Wikipedia. Now, get on Wikipedia, have them call you anything, and try to correct it. You can't.
Yeah.
And these are people who are anonymous. They believe that they cannot be sued. That's going to be proven wrong. They're not as smart as they think, and also the people behind it are going to be exposed. But this is how they've destroyed the reputations of everyone, the holistic doctors or doctors, orthodox doctors who chose to do something a little differently, maybe emphasizing a plant-based diet, actually benefiting their patients. It doesn't matter the results. You're demonized, you're put on there. Just like anyone challenging vaccines, anyone challenging the use of antiretrovirals, that there may be better ways of treating people with AIDS. Now you're suddenly called an AIDS denialist.
Right, right.
And
I know this very well.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. I mean, we're going to start. I believe it's time that the entire progressive movement. And by the way, there's a huge division between the liberal corporate left, the Democrats, and progressives. Progressives are looking for the truth. They're not ideologues, and they're not promoting ideology.
Right.
They're looking for the truth wherever it is, but they've tried to lump constantly the word progressive into all the debates to try to marginalize true progressives. And I believe it's important now that all of us work together to expose the entire corporate federal government use of power, their hegemony, to silence voices. And by the way, just finally, Catelyn Johnstone wrote an article today called "Tell Me More About How Google Isn't Part of the Government and Can Therefore Censor Whoever It Wants." Brilliant article. Did you read
that
article?
Yeah, no, I did see that. She's terrific. And, you know, speaking of her, I would note that, liberal Democrats, you know, are on the wrong side of all these issues for the reason that they tend to have, you know, drunk that Kool-Aid about conspiracy theory long since. They will always snicker at people who talk about the Kennedy assassination or 9/11 or vaccines or any of these other issues because they do seem to believe that the government can do no wrong. So that I have actually found in my own experience that in some cases it's actually people on the right who make better allies in some of these struggles because, you know, distrust of the government comes more naturally to them than it does to liberals. And, you know, we could get into a whole separate discussion of gun control and Parkland and the protest the other day. But let's stick with the subject of Wikipedia. First of all, I want to pledge my assistance to you in any way I can help with this exposure of the Wikipedia, of Wikipedia's complicity. It isn't only vaccines, as you know, or AIDS, or so-called AIDS denialism. I mean, there are so many really urgent public health issues that one is forbidden to talk about, such as the dangers of low-level radiation, the threat posed to our young people's, you know, brains and health by excessive cell phone use, the dangers of 5G, which the government is about to roll out. You know, Wi-Fi isn't even used in classrooms in France. I mean, that's how dangerous it is. In this country, people have never even heard that there's any risk, you know, because all this stuff is consistently blacked out by interests that don't care at all about the welfare of the American people. These are interests that are interested only in squeezing as many dollars as possible out of people's illnesses, which I believe the state is interested in prolonging. And while we're on the subject of forbidden topics having to do with our health, you know, no mainstream outlet, and I can't think of any left outlets for that matter, has reported on the staggering toll among holistic doctors over the last 2 years. This is something that the publication Health Nut News has been covering. A woman there named Erin Elizabeth has been tracking the staggering rate of untimely deaths among holistic doctors of all kinds. These are people who are either murdered or die by accident or are killed by suicide. This is a story that Snopes claimed had been debunked because they compared that death toll with the death rate overall for all doctors in the United States. Okay, comparing the untimely deaths of only a certain kind of doctor to the overall death rate of all doctors makes quite clear that what we've been seeing is completely unnatural, and the odds against it having happened naturally are something like several billion to one. I asked a mathematician friend of mine to run those numbers. It couldn't have happened. It's a little bit like all the witnesses to the Kennedy assassination who turned up dead within 2 or 3 years, you know? I mean, this should be a major story. If this were in Russia, Gary, if holistic doctors were dropping dead, being killed, thrown out of buildings, shot, stabbed, killing themselves all of a sudden, if that had happened under Putin, you can bet your boots that every major outlet in the country would be screaming about it, right? But it happens here, so to talk about it is just a conspiracy theory, okay? But I think these things, they couldn't be more important, you know? I mean, I started out tonight talking about Syria and Russia, and those are definitely volatile situations. There's an existential risk there because we're talking about the possibility of nuclear war. But in its own way, this set of stories about our health, you know, in our welfare, in our medical system, this also involves our very existence as a people. So I'm glad that we're ending by discussing it.
I want to end with just a quote here from Caitlin Johnstone. Quote, when you tell an establishment Democrat that Google's hiding and removal of content is a dangerous form of censorship, they often magically transform it into Ayn Rand right before your eyes. It's a private company, and they can do what they want with their private property, they will tell you. It's insane to say that a private company regulating its own affairs is the same as government censorship. Well, this is absurd on its surface because Google is not separate from the government in any meaningful way. It has been financially intertwined with U.S. intelligence agencies since its very inception when it received research grants from the CIA and the National Security Agency for mass surveillance, pours massive amounts of money into federal lobbying and D.C. think tanks, has a cozy relationship with the National Security Agency and multiple defense contractors. Quote, some of Google's partnerships with the intelligence community are so close and cooperative and have been going on for so long that it's not easy to discern where Google ends and the government's spook operations begin, wrote journalist Yashav Levine in a 2014 Dano Daily article entitled Oakland Emails Give Another Glimpse into the Google Military Surveillance Complex. The purchase of Keyhole was a major milestone for Google, marking the moment the company stopped being a purely consumer-facing internet company and began integrating with the U.S. government. Levine wrote in a recent blog post about his book, Surveillance Valley. While Google's public relations team did its best to keep the company's consumer-facing internet looking good, the company wrapped in a false aura of geeky altruism. Company executives pursued an aggressive strategy to become the Lockheed Martin of the internet age. And now we learn from Gizmodo that Google has been helping with artificial intelligence for the Pentagon's drone program. And that's just some of this article. So we end with the idea that Google is out there, along with Facebook, deciding what is acceptable for the public to know. And they're censoring everyone that they can who is an independent thinker, a progressive thinker, and that is unfortunate for all of us. Mark, thank you for being on today and sharing your insights with us.
Anytime, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Professor, down at New York University, and a person who cares about the public and the truth behind what stories you can and can't see, and he's out there fighting on our behalf. So we want to give markcrispinmiller.com and the author of News from the Underground our full support. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you all for listening.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.